In the parsha, we read about Yaakov Avinu and about all the children that he had. But in addition to that, we speak about Yaakov Avinu and his wives. Now, as far as marrying two sisters is concerned, the Ramban has a long discussion about this. How is Yaakov, who is Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kula, able to marry two sisters? You familiar with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember his answer? I'm just curious.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he said that took place in Chutz Laretz. And Yaakov was only meticulous about observing the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why indeed Rachel dies before he enters the land of Israel in Beit Lechem.
That's why she dies?
That's why she dies. Hashgacha had it that she should die before he enters into the land so that he wouldn't be married to two sisters when he enters into the land. But that's not what I want to focus your attention on. I want to ask the question about the fact that Yaakov Avinu married more than one woman. In fact, we read in the parasha that he married four different women. And the question is there no limit to how many women you're allowed to marry? Many people say that one is more than enough. You know, you don't need more than one wife. You know, halavai, you should be able to provide your one wife with all that you have to provide her with. But in any event, marrying two women, which is called in fancy English polygamy, was a little bit more common back in the day. And
didn't he have precedence though with Abraham and Hagar? And
like, did he have what
precedence?
Right, there were precedence, but
Abraham also married like Hagar.
But let's take the case of Rachel and Leah. You know, just to be married to Rachel and Leah—that's two wives. And we'll soon see that it's not really permissible to marry two wives. Certainly not in our time. And the question is, there might be a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim on this issue, because you may have heard that there are still a few old-time Yemenites, you know, that have more than one wife around, you know, very religious people. But as a general rule, although the Iser of marrying two wives is not mentioned in the Gemara itself, but yet we'll see that it's a Cherim de Rabbeinu Gershom. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now there is one Gemara in Yevamos that does set up a condition, which means that you can't always marry more than one woman. So if you take a look in the third paragraph, there's the sheet of Rabbah. Rabbah says that you can only marry more than one woman if you have enough of a yecholet, enough of a of possessions and wherewithal and a job and so forth, lefarnes es kol neshosov, that he can support all his wives. Now, although I have to admit to you that Rabbah is talking about material support, financial support, but there's really more to it than that, because Jewish marriage entails more than just supporting a woman. It also entails ona. And ona is a mitzvah which really encompasses, I would say, the entire emotional life of a married couple. So for a man to be married to more than one woman would really mean that that he has to be able to provide. But again, provide, the merchot kfulot, you know, provide means in a broader sense to be able to take care of both their needs. And that means psychological and emotional. You know, we're not just talking about financial needs. In any event, the fact that Rabbah made this kind of a stipulation, it means that, you know, he apparently was not totally okay or totally thrilled about polygamy. And probably it wasn't so common even at the time of the Gemara. But as far as Jewish law is concerned, the history of the prohibition of marrying more than one woman begins with Rabbeinu Gershom. And Rabbeinu Gershom lives approximately in the year 1000.
Wow.
Which would mean just about 1,000 years ago. And he made a takana. Yeah. Now this takana was made by Rebbe Gershon, who's called Ma'ar HaGola. I just want you to appreciate the status of this individual. You know, normally if somebody in some community comes up with a ban, you know, he puts up a Pachka Villa, you know, there may
those
be some... Yeah, right. There may be a few people that, you know, they'll get the message. You know, I remember when Rav Shach in Bnei Brak prohibited televisions, and I walked down the streets of Harnof waiting to see all the televisions, you know, come out of the, being thrown out of the houses, you know, out of the windows. I didn't see any. So, but he was Rabbeinu Gershon Mar HaGola. You know, he was the most influential person, perhaps, in Rashi's life. And in the life of the Ashkenazic Jews at his time. And he decrees a ban against, a cherem against a person who marries more than one woman. Now you should know that this wasn't the only cherem that he introduced. He introduced a cherem of gerushin bal karcha, means if a woman refuses to accept a get, then you're not allowed to just throw a get. According to Torah law, Isha Misgaresh is Bal Karcha, you can just throw a get in her chatzer and she's Megureshes. But Rebbeinu Gershon prohibited that. He also had other prohibitions. For example, as far as privacy laws, he prohibited reading someone else's mail.
Mm.
And I presume that would apply to emails as well.
Was he the first to like mainstream idea of cherem? Like to,
well, there
like
were haramim before him, but I would say of all the haramim throughout Jewish history that had teeth to them, you know, that really spread like wildfire and were accepted by so many communities, this one of Rabbeinu Gershom was by far on top of the list. Mm-hmm. You know, we find the whole sugya in Erechin about haramim and the powers of chachamim to impose all sorts of bans and decrees, and they give teeth to it by imposing punishments and so on. But the nature and the scope of this one, prohibiting polygamy and at the same time prohibiting divorcing a woman against her will, the scope and the acceptance of this is really, really unique in Jewish history. And what we want to ask is how long was this cherem in effect? So if you take a look at this paragraph, he says, Be'erch b'shnas dalid alofim tafshin nun, which is about, he says, 1,000 years ago, tiken rabbeinu v'erishin agol ma'or agol Yisrael l'kichas yosef mishachas, not to marry more than one woman. And he added to this prohibition a cherem, which means a person who does so is excluded from the Jewish community. And the question that we want to ask is, how long is this decree, this cherem, intact? How long is it valid? Does it have a limitation? And what is the source for this, for the tokeh, for the power and the validity of this cherem? Does it imply and impose itself on all kihilos Yisrael or only certain kihilos? And why did he find it necessary to institute this prohibition?
Where did he live?
He lived in Germany. And what I want you to do is take a look at the second side of your page. Because on the bottom of the first side of your page, you'll see that he introduces the fact that there are a number of sources or a number of reasons why Rabbeinu Gershon enacted this cherem. So we start with the Mardechai. The Mardechai, one of the great Ashkenazic Rishonim, in Masechta Ksuvos, and he's brought down by the Darkei Moshe the Ramah at the beginning of Eben Ezra, writes that the reason for this Iser is L'toelet Shalom Bayit. Now, one of the issues that's going to come up over and over again is how severe of a violation is this if somebody would violate this cherem. And the language of the Mardechai is Mishum Ktata, which means that we have to avoid any sort of quarreling or fighting. You can imagine that if you have a family of one father and one mother, one husband, one wife, it leads to a greater harmony and unity in the marriage. Whereas if you have a polygamous family, often that leads to jealousy and to strife, and that's what we call ketata. And that reason is also reflected in the Tshuvas Haran, Shema Cherim Zeh Lo Takanas Nashim Levadna. So we might think that this, the purpose of this Takana exhausts itself in protecting the women, right? Because who wants to have a tzara, you know, a second wife? But rather, Aflu Takanas HaNashim. It really is for the benefit of Klal Yisrael, the entire community, Kedei Shliachnisu Meriva L'Tok Beisam. Which means that if even if she were to say, well, you know, I waive my rights, and as far as I'm concerned, let him marry a second woman, that would not undermine the force of this takana, because takana is mishum ketata, which is objective, and it doesn't just simply defend and protect the rights of the woman. Kasher yeshnam yoter misha achat babayit, ein manos mimrivot uktatot. You know, you have two women running the household, and you know the children are running around, and the husband has to somehow divvy up his attention to both these women, and there could be inevitably myriads of situations where one woman has to, in a sense, lord it over the other woman. You know, who takes the realm over here? You know, it's very complicated to run a family with two women,
which we saw with Yaakov and Rachel. That, like, correct. She was more the...
Even so, even with Yaakov and Rachel, with all due respect, there were issues. You know, we're going to have the whole situation of Rachel, you know, making a claim that it's my husband, and Leah would say, well, you're stealing my husband. And remember also the episode of the Dudaim. Mm-hmm. You know, there are various episodes in these parishes which indicate that it's very difficult to maintain the shalom bias of a family when you have two women, each of whom think that they could rule and reign. But now we have the Rashba in Tshuvas. The Rashba is also quoted in the Darkei Moshe at the beginning of Evan Ezer. And he gives a totally different answer and a totally different approach to why Rabbeinu Gershon would make this takana. And he writes, it's litovas hanoshim. This is to protect the rights of a woman. In other words, he married one woman, and she has the right to object to his bringing into this marriage a second wife. You know, most women will say to husbands, you know, I can tolerate anything except this. You know, this is where they get really harsh and really stiff. So he says, how would a husband treat his wife if he simply could bring in another wife in addition to his first wife? You know, if she's not behaving properly, you know, and she's resenting the way he behaves towards her, he'll just marry a second wife. That puts a woman, a married woman, into a very vulnerable situation.
But you have that option now, meaning not that you can just marry another one, but you can just divorce and marry.
Where Rabbeinu Gershon, according to the Rashba, made a second cherem, which prevented and prohibited a person, a husband, from divorcing his wife.
Mm.
Unless she agrees. So just like he can't marry a second wife unless she agrees, he can't divorce her unless she agrees.
Mm.
And therefore the Rashba comes to the conclusion that b'matzavim bahem mutal al adam lakach tisha shniyah midin Torah ein tchula l'cherem, that there are situations in which a person has to marry a second wife, and in that case the cherem doesn't apply. You see, according to the first interpretation of the Mordechai, it's going to be very, very difficult to allow violating this cherem and permit a man to marry a second wife. According to the Rashba, it's a little bit easier, because the Rashba is saying that we have to protect the interest of the wife. Maybe if the Torah says, you know, halacha requires you to marry a second wife, then she has no rights to object. Whereas according to the Mordechai, the svara, the logic of cherem and to avoid ketata and to guarantee shalom bayis, that makes it a deraisa. You know, that makes it a real. This is not just takana. No, it's basically according to the Mordechai, what Rabbeinu Gershom is doing is he's taking the laws of the Torah, the principles of the Torah of marriage, and he's looking at the situation of his day and deciding that he has to get up and off his chair and with the tokef, with all the power of his authority, to make sure that those principles of the Torah are being upheld. And in order to do so, he had to institute this chair. Now,
is it talking about a case of like chalitza and langibum? Like, is that the case that the Torah requires you to?
No, the case would be if, let's say, for example, Shalom Aleichem, if you find that she is suspect of certain averos. Let's say, for example. Again, you have to see exactly what suspect means, what evidence there is, and what averos she might have committed. In the language of the Gemara Ksubas, it's called overis al das, that she violates the das. So under certain circumstances, he would have to marry a second wife. Hmm. Or take, for example, the case of a woman who is simply incapable of functioning. She's a shota, she lost it. Or she's incapable of having children. Let's say, for example, 10 years go by and they can't produce children. So there may be many circumstances, situations in which the Torah would actually require of him to marry another woman.
Is there a...
Right, for the sake of period of arrivia, maybe for the sake of matzavah dava erva. Yeah.
Is there like a reverse aguna type thing where like the wife is not to be found and can't deliver a get? And
right.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, go. The chief rabbi of Israel was supposed to speak at the Emmett Learning Center, but then he didn't show up because he was in Beit Din. Went longer than he was supposed to because he was finishing up a case where the wife was refusing to get for 27 years or something.
Right.
He was done.
Wow.
And we're going to soon see that in such a case, is there a way that we could protect the interest of the husband? Just like we wanted, you know, Rabbeinu Gershon wants to protect the interest of the wife. What about the interest of the husband? If he can't marry a second woman and he's stuck in this marriage, and if the halacha requires that she should receive the get, but she refuses to do so, so again, he's stuck with Cheir Duran and Gershon. And what we're going to discuss in a few minutes, Amir Tzashem, is which of the two charamim are more severe. That's why this machlokes in the Mordechai and the Rashbah, and the Rashbah is very important. Because in a situation where we want him to marry, and we obligate him to marry a second woman, which is better? Should we violate the prohibition of the Cheirim of Bal Karcha and let him throw a get into her, into Chatzir? Or should we somehow alleviate the Cheirim of marrying two wives? Which of the Charamim is more severe, which is less? But first we have to see another two understandings or insights into why Rabbeinu Gershom instituted this Cheirim. The first is quoted in Tshuva's Avnei Nezer, which I think we remember, we've learned about the Avnei Nezer many times. He was the Sukkot Shavu Rebbe. So he quotes a tshuva, an earlier tshuva, from the Maram Padua. Padua was a city in Italy. And according to Maram Padua, this cherim of Rabbeinu Gershom was enacted because of what? Misibot Kalkaliot. And that is yitzivuta ha-kalkalit shel ha-ta mishpacha ha-sui l'torer mitoch tzorech ha-adam l'do'og li'yoter mi'isha achat. We're talking about a financial consideration. Imagine having to support more than one woman. That could put a tremendous financial burden on the family. Chasheshu v'shakdu al benot Yisrael v'yotei v'gola asher yarbelo nashim v'yolid banim arbe lo yuchal haspikam. He's going to have so many children in the family, Kenai Nahara, right? That he won't be able to support all of them. Even according to Rabbah that we saw on the top of the page from the Gemara in Yevamos, no say Adam Kamenoshim, but Rabbah added the stipulation, Vahuda Islam is on Asayu, he has enough finances, you know, to support all of them. And now, says the Ram Padua, it's already back in the time of Rabbeinu Gershon that there was a fear that because of the Golus and people were so financially strapped due to persecution and so forth and so on, everyone was considered aniyim. How could they possibly guarantee that they could support such a large family? The Chassam Sofer, on the other hand, says that the Iser of polygamy is based on a different premise. And that is kidei l'chazek et ha'isur shel gerushin bal karcha shel isha. Really, in truth, the main motivating factor that moved Rabbeinu Gershon to stand up and make these charamim, the Iker Cherim that he primarily that he was interested in is not to divorce a woman against her will. Now, if he can marry another wife, then he doesn't have to divorce her against her will. But now that he can't marry another woman, he's going to have to somehow work out the kinks in this marriage because he has no other option. If he can marry another woman, Rabbeinu Gershon felt, you know what, he could always mistreat his wife, he could always get into a situation of quarrels and ketotot. And what are you going to tell me? That he's not allowed to divorce her against her will. You know what? He'll pressure her and he'll say, you know what? You don't want to take the divorce. I'll go ahead and marry another woman. So basically, according to the Chasam Sofer, the reason why Rabbeinu Gershon instituted the second takana, not to marry a second woman, is in order to strengthen the first takana, that a man shouldn't be able to flippantly just, you know, threaten his wife and say, I'll throw you a divorce. He writes the following. He says, "Hayu anashim yicholim la'akof et ha'isur shel gerushei isha bal karcha." They could simply circumvent this isur of throwing a get into her rishus against her will. Who haya yachol lachnis isha nosefet l'toch habayit. Let him just marry a second woman, and that solves all his problems. Va'adafat hashniya itamei le'a dochat harishona. Once he gives preferential treatment to his second wife, Mimela, the first wife, is going to finally buckle under and beg for a get. She wants out of the get. And he writes, "Lule de mistafino lechadesh davar shlois kira gaon vakadmonim hava mina de rabbeinu gershon havi tikun hare tikain shtei takanot vashniat luya barishona lachar shegazar shelo legaresh bal karcha ulufamim al karcha shelo lirtzono yadurim nachash bekfifa achas al yidei ze yisa isha lisha." Instead of forcing him to remain with this wife and trying to work out the difficulties in the marriage, what do? We give him an option of marrying a second woman. Oh, no. Then you've undermined the entire purpose of this takana, which pressures him to work out the marriage. It's very similar to the takana of ksuba. You remember the Gemara says, Shalotie kala bein of lotzia. He's going to pay the ksuba. Right, I'm sorry, before there was a ksuba, he would throw a get to his wife, and that's it. He doesn't have to pay her anything. So the ksuba was instituted with a very handsome sum of money to inhibit him from divorcing his wife. Why do we want to inhibit a person from divorcing his wife? Imagine if it's so easy just to divorce your wife. Who's going to work out the issues of a difficult, challenging marriage? Rabbeinu Gershon felt that the ksuba wasn't enough of a harta'ah, you know, to inhibit him, because even the ksuba, he has enough money to pay the ksuba, so he'll just give her a get. What did he add? That he can only divorce his wife if she accepts the get willingly. In order to strengthen that takana and avoid these ketotos so that the marriage would be worked out, Rabbeinu Gershon instituted a second cherem, which is secondary to the first cherem, that a man should not be able to marry a second woman. And then after summarizing all these approaches, you'll see that the last paragraph has the Avnei Nezer, and the Avnei Nezer said, and this you see it, it's the last paragraph on your before the Ofi Ha'Isur, he says that there are another two reasons for this takana. Siba achati lema'et et hana'at adam matzav shel galut v'churban abayit. In other words, there were many, many different takanos that were made to curtail the amount of personal joy that a person would achieve during this period of after the exile, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, a person should not be allowed to marry two wives. It's interesting, the fundamental assumption here of the Avnei Nezer is that life could be so pleasurable and enjoyable if we married more than one wife. That's one way of seeing it. It's almost as if his desire to have another wife is to increase his joy in life. But then, according to the Avnei Nezer's explanation, it comes out that this takana of Rabbeinu Gershon really belongs to all those many takanas that were made in the Sugis and Avodah Zarah and elsewhere in Shas in order to curtail the simcha after the Churban HaBayis. Like, for example, you know, we're not allowed to listen to music while we eat. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Live music or just any?
any music that has more than one instrument in it. You know, one instrument is a question. That's part of the debate. Well, for example, you're not a complete a house. I think we had a discussion about this way back when. Mm-hmm. You have to always leave a part of the house that's incomplete. All this is to curtail the joy after the churban. Then he has sibash niyayim mechashash shema haheter lisa shtei nashim yavil yidei takala sha'ach yisat achoto. Imagine if a man has two wives. One lives in Georgia and the other lives in Texas. And in those days, like you say, they didn't have the means of communications that we have. They didn't know what was going on in one place or another. It means he's having a lot of little babies in one place and he's having a lot of little babies in another place from two different wives. And it might turn out that a sister would marry a brother. Because even if you're a half-sister, you know, you share the same father or you share the same mother, that's enough to engender the Iser of a brother and a sister, which is an Iser Kares. And in this whole mixture of so many wives, you know, how are we going to clarify who's related to whom?
Also, the fact that that brother can marry two wives.
That makes it even more complicated, right? And one of them might be his sister. Maybe he married two sisters, right? Okay. Okay, now we get to the Darkei Moshe. This Rabosa, I want you to follow at the bottom of your page 2. This is a real turning point in our discussion.
Rabbi, if I could ask, why so far have we not even mentioned the concept of a Pilagesh and like these, like is that
Pilagesh,
that
I would like to avoid the discussion about Pilagesh because that's really a shir unto itself. If you're interested, just send me a one-line email and I'll prepare a shir on Pilagesh. There's a tremendous controversy about Pilagesh. Who's allowed to marry a Pilagesh? Is it just a Melech or is it anyone? A Hedjot?
Okay.
Right, and not only that, what is a Pilagesh? Does she have a ksuba? How do you terminate the relationship of a Pilagesh? Do you have to give a get? Do you not have to give a get? Alright. What's important about this Darkei Moshe? This machlokes haposkim, a man was married to a woman for 10 years and they did not have children. Okay? Nasui meshach eser shanim o yoter, belo shenifkad bezer shel kayom. So now under these circumstances, he says, the mitzvah is to divorce his wife and marry a second wife, correct? Because maybe he'll merit having children from the second wife. Now, if you're stealing the option of divorcing your wife or marrying a second wife in the light of Rabbeinu Gershon, so what's going to be in this particular circumstance where the halacha requires you to divorce your wife and to marry a second wife? What do we do with Cherem to Rabbeinu Gershon when it contravenes this principle of Eser Shonim, of 10 years? So the Darkei Moshe claims that this is going to be a machlokes rishonim. Why? He says the following. Yeah.
He can then marry her back? It's like, why would she not want to?
Again, she's not happy with the fact that he's marrying his second wife.
Even if
and therefore, she's not going to let him marry his second wife, and she's not even going to accept a get from him. But he's in a bind now because you're imposing upon him Cherem to Rabbeinu Gershon.
Mm-hmm. Then we can use the tricks we've been learning in Ketubot. It's Kedas Moshe Yisrael. Connects it.
Ah, okay. That's one way of going. We could be mafkir the original Kedushin. But usually we mafkir the original Kedushin if a person does something illegal. But here he didn't do anything illegal. You know, he's not a criminal that we should be mafkir his Kedushin and make his bios into bias nus.
Gotcha. Okay.
So what do we do in this case? Oh, so the Ramos says it's a machlokas haposkin. And it would seem to depend upon the machlokas between the Mardukhai and the Rashba. If you go to Mardukhai, that this cherem is really fundamental. It's Doraisa. It's based on Shalom Bayis and to avoid Ketata. We're not going to be so light, you know, and so flippant to be to push aside and override this cherem. But if you go like the Rashba, and the Rashba says that they were protecting her rights, and that was the takana that the Rabbanon made, it's a pure Rabbanon, and for the sake of the mitzvah Doraisa, period of Arivya, we can overlook and override this takana, this chayre. But now we come to a suffix. What do we do in a case of a suffix? He says, "Kevan sheyesh poses sofek umachlokes muta lisa isha nosefes al ishto." He's going to say that here the law is sofek lekula. Why? Hasiva lekachi shelo medubar beisur Torah. According to the final conclusion of the Darkei Moshe, we're not dealing with a do'oraisa, but rather with a takana. B'takana shenitkana b'nei chashash li'isur Torah. Ah, he wants to say like this, even if I hold like the Mordechai, we're not 100% sure that if he marries a second wife, it's going to lead to ketata. We're afraid. So it's a chashash that he undermined the Torah law of Shalom Bayis. In such a case, where the Iser is a takana because of a chashash of the Doraisa, we can apply the principle of Safek Derabbanan Lekula. And this is a break, you know, a breakthrough psak of the Ramah, because we always have Doraisas and Derabbanans, but here we have something that's in the middle, in the gray area. Cherem Derabbanu Gersh, and the way the Mordechai has it, is to protect us from violating a Doraisa, but yet it was the Takana that was instituted by Rabbeinu Gershom. Says the Ramah, we can treat it as a Derabbanan, because it's a Takana. He doesn't violate an Issur Doraisa by marrying his second wife, the Torah permitted it, and therefore in a Suffolk situation, we can be lenient.
How can we say that Shlomo is the Doraisa, even though there's no like actual mitzvah to Doraisa to have Shlomo Bayis? We do learn from Sota, Hashem is Mokhik Hashem, you know.
Right, but I think the primary source for that would be the Gemara at the beginning of the second parak of Kiddushin. And the Gemara says, you're not allowed to marry a woman until you see her at least once. Why? Because that's going to create a tension in the marriage that will lead to divorce and a violation of the prohibition of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. Meaning the Gemara understands that Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha is not just a mitzvah asay, but it's also what we call a lav haba mechlal asay, and it's an isur to do something that will lead to a violation of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha because you'll have to divorce this woman.
So it's no more of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha than any other Jew.
That's what it would seem. Yeah, you're right, at the face of it. But again, the situations here are very sensitive, so that
right.
Although it would apply to any person,
yeah,
you go
deeper into her heart than anyone,
exactly.
Anyone else. Exactly.
Right, because of the marriage relationship. And now I want you to see the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer starts on the bottom of your page 2, going on to page 3. And the Avnei Nezer, the same tshuva that we mentioned earlier, who, if you recall, gives a number of reasons for this takana of Rabbeinu Gershon, he says the following. In Yan Ze Afshu Shanui B'machloket, he says, even though the Ramah is correct that this machloket is here about the nature and the reason what motivated Rabbeinu Gershon, nevertheless, he says that B'nigud L'das HaRamah and others, he wants to say that there is a din of Safek L'chumra. That the rule here is that if we have any doubt, we have to go L'chumra. And why is that so? So again, let's assume, like the Avnei Nezer's second reason, that we're afraid that a brother might marry a sister. That might have the stringency of a Doraisa. He says the following. Hashelat tluya b'tam isur shetikin Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gershon. Im sibat acher mimitoch chashash l'shalom bayis, or l'matzav kalkali shalom mishpocha. If we're only saying it's a chashash that it might somehow lead to undermining the financial security of the family, and people who want to get food and support will not be getting it, or perhaps it might undermine the happiness and the shalom bayis, then you're coming up with a takonas chachamim that might undermine a doraisa. And therefore it remains, as the Ramah had said it, as a safek derabanan lekula situation. Aval ima takona kshura lechashash isur Torah, if we're really talking about a violation of an isur erva, for example, a chashash that a brother might marry his sister, then he says we might be more inclined to be machmir in the case of a suffix. So Rabosai, when it comes down to it, a person who's married for 10 years and he wants to divorce his wife, and Allah really requires him to divorce his wife, but his wife refuses to accept the get, can we allow him in such circumstances to marry another woman? And the answer is, according to the Avdei Nezer at least, I don't have any other sources right now, that it really depends. If we're dealing with the Takana or to some sort of Chashash though, right? So then it's a Takana de Rabbanan and something de Rabbanan Lekula. But if on the other hand, we would be convinced that we're dealing with a serious issue about Arayos, then we never found any room for leniency with regard to Chashash Arayos. We have to be stringent and go to all ends of the world to guarantee that there won't be a situation that might arise where a brother will marry a sister.
But wait, even then it's just a chashash, it's a gzera, it's not a daraisa.
But he says that with regard to any chashash that we find, he brings many examples of a chashash where we institute something because of our rayos, because we're afraid, I'm trying to remember the cases that he brings, then we treat it as a daraisa.
Then who removes a mitzvah, a say also.
Correct.
So, shouldn't it still
overcome the zeros of our rivals and the fact that we never saw that we're being mekal? I guess if you're putting a mitzvah seh against an iser erva, so the violation of a mitzvah seh really incurs no punishment. I mean, kofen also would do. Correct. Aseh dochalosa seh applies only in a strict case where at the moment that you're violating the losa seh, you're also being mekayim an eseh. So if, let's say, for example, when he gives this get against her will, or at the moment that he marries a woman, he would be, at that moment, he's being mekayim an eseh, then you could possibly think of eseh dochalosa. But if the relationship that a brother will have with a sister...
It's even more far. I would say it's even more lenient than right. In this case.
Okay, so you could argue with the Avdei Nezer, I have no problem with that.
No, he doesn't even speak about it.
Right. Okay, now we want to talk about the tokef, the force of the cherem. Why have the Ashkenazic Jews been so careful about this cherem? The Rush writes in his Tshuvas that the reason for this is that the people, the nation, accepted upon themselves this Isur. That's like the principle of Neder or Shavya Nafshei Chaticha Disura. And once a generation of Jews accepts upon themselves an Isur, Masru Oso Dor Achar Dor, they pass it on from one generation to the other, Kalacha Mechayevet. And therefore, from one generation to the other, this transmission obligates the next generation. So the force of Rabbi Gershon's decree, therefore, according to the Rosh, is this acceptance by the community. And the Gemara Masechta Makkos has a whole discussion about a neder al das rabin. You know, when the community accepts a neder, whether or not you're allowed to be mefer such a neder or matir such a neder, it's a very, very severe neder. It's by force of the communal acceptance of this Isur. He says, Lefit Varav, Tokfan shall takanot Rabbeinu Gershon, who tokef shall kabbalat rabim, v'kevan she isurim ha'elu hiskavlu v'kilos ashkenaz, harim mechayvim. V'nekuda zuk hashuva b'yuchad le'or ha'vikuach al tokef ha'takanot le'or zman. Okay, maybe it was, as we'll soon see, the case was that the community accepted upon themselves for a limited amount of time this isur of takanos Rabbeinu Gershon. And therefore, siba achat la'orer al tokef ha'takanot is she'elat hemshech kiyuam la'orech shanim. And this is a discussion of all the Nosei Kelim in Evan Ezra Siman Aleph, in which they quote the Ma'arik. The Ma'arik was a late Rishon. And the Beis Yosef, in his Tshuvas, quotes this Ma'arik, that Takonis Rabbeinu Gershom ena betokef kayom, why he nimshechet ad sofa elef ha'chamishi. So if you go back, we said that it started in the year 1000, which was the end of the Elef HaRevi'i. And now we're in the Elef HaChamishi, which begins with the year 1240. And therefore, we're already beyond the Tokef of the Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershon. And it comes out that according to this insight, or this psak, I would say, that's quoted by the Beis Yosef in the name of the Ma'arik, the original takana and cherem for any gershom is no longer applicable today.
What year was the Rabbeinu gershom
lived? Towards the end of the fourth millennium, which is in the year 1000. So now we're fast forwarding to the end of the fourth millennium, the beginning of the fifth millennium, which is the year 1240. So although, according to Marik, Rabbeinu Gershom's takana and enactment was in force for 240 years, till the end of that millennium, but he never imposed this chayr beyond that year.
Oh, it's not for 1,000 years, it's till the
when
end
he wasn't,
of
he wasn't alive then.
Well, of course not. Yeah, this is 240 years later, but he made a limitation in his original chayr. As I state in the
why would he do that?
I guess he wanted to leave it up to every generation to decide whether the society needed that cherem. Because again, he realized that he was undermining the law of the Torah, which allows you to marry two women. In any event, this is brought down in the Tshuvas of the Beis Yosef, in the name of the Ma'arik. What about in Shulchan Aruch? How did the Beis Yosef deal with this when he was writing as the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch? So if you take a look at his language at the beginning of Evan Ezer, he says, Ein kayom tokef la'isur. There is no force for this Isur. It's no longer in force. And the question is, how do the Ashkenazim accept this la'alocha? So the Ramah, right there on the spot at the beginning of Evan Ezer, comments that he doesn't agree with the Beit Yosef. And this is one of those typical cases where the Ramah disagrees with the Beit Yosef, and he quotes the Tshuvas Marshal, that was the Yamshel Shlomo. I'm sorry, the Marshal is actually after the Ramah, that was a bad mistake. Not long after Ramah, maybe 50 years later. But the Marshal in Yamshel Shlomo in Yevamos writes that the Tokef HaCherem is Omeid B'Tokfo. And the Pischei Tshuva there at the beginning of Evan Ezer writes that that's the Haskamas Rishonim. So everybody's ganging up on this Ma'arik and assuming that there was never a time limitation that was instituted by Rabbeinu Gershom, and therefore that Chayrim is still in effect today. But there's another issue, which is the Beit Yosef quotes in the name of the Rajba, and that perhaps is an even more important issue. Shalom Nesar HaIsrael B'Makomos Geograph Mesuyam, there are only certain geographical areas on the face of the globe that accepted this takona of the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom. It's not b'kol makom, it's not everywhere. And HaIsrael lo espashet, and he writes that in Provence, which is very close to France and Germany, which is considered mostly Ashkenazi territory, lo shamanu al HaIsrael hazeh.
Wow.
And it's very fascinating because the Rashba spent most of his life in Spain, and you know, if he would have told us that in Spain, you know, the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom was no longer in vogue, no longer valid and acceptable, that I wouldn't understand. But he's talking about Provence. You know, you're really coming very close to the Ashkenazic communities. And he concludes in this tshuva by saying that Talmidei Chacham b'Sfarad, I can testify to the effect that in Spain, the Talmidei Chachamim marry more than one wife. V'ein misha choshesh l'iser. So this is fascinating because the Rashba, as I told you, spent most of his life or a large part of his life in Spain, and there he testifies that Talmidei Chacham in Spain would marry to more than one woman. And the Teimanim until this day are marrying more than one woman. I mean, I don't know if they go, but I don't think they marry more than one woman today, but the old timers, you know, coming from the old country, they came with two wives, and they're, now, I don't know how many there are left alive today, but they came in the 50s and the early 60s. He says, what?
They're camels and their wives, you know, just
right.
Thousands of years ago.
So basically, in terms of Sephardic communities today, we have two different reasons why the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom would no longer apply. Number one, maybe it was limited until the end of the fourth millennium, which means that now, following the year 1240, there is no Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom. And even if you'll assume that Rabbeinu Gershom did not put any time limitations, but it wasn't accepted by all communities. And in the Sephardic Sephardic communities, it wasn't accepted.
That probably explains why in the Sephardic Ketubah you can get one with a Shavua or without a Shavua.
Oh, beautiful. So if you want to fast forward for a moment to the next to the last paragraph at the end of this piece, he says, Avur Bnei Edot HaMizrach, as far as Sephardic communities are concerned, Rav Avadya Paskins and Yabia Omer, Shikronit, from a fundamental perspective, according to the strict halacha, Bnei Edot HaMizrach should follow the Horat Shulchan Aruch, and he allows you to marry more than one woman. Kach she'ein tzorch lahakpid al cherev d'remeni gershon, Sepharim don't have to worry about cherev. However, he writes, Miyad sha'minog, sha'minog harovach hu, the minog that's very well accepted in all Sephardic communities, lichlol b'shtarak tuba, to add into the ksuba, write it in as an addition, t'nai, lefiv asur lebal lisha lakachet isha lishto. So as far as Sephardim is concerned, it all depends on what's written in the Ksuba. Rav Avadya doesn't stop there. He continues to clarify this condition that's added and accepted by the Baal. And he says, and that's what you were talking about before, Aaron, that the tokef, the force of this condition, is that of a Shvua.
Right, it's not just the fact of the chalos of the kinyan. If he goes ahead and marries another woman, then the first Ksuba is Pakan, and he's not married to the first one. So he is not married to Ksuba at the same time.
He says, "What is the talk of the Shvua? B'mokam sheyesh mitzvos lisa isha acheres. Supposing you have a mitzvah to marry another woman, for example, he doesn't have children for the first. In such a case, the Shvua is no longer binding. You know, you can't take a Shvua to violate the Torah law. So as long as there's no Torah law that says he has to marry another woman, the Shvua is binding. Once the law is that he has to marry a second wife, because he has to fulfill the mitzvah period of Rivia, the Shvua is no longer binding." And Rav Avadya adds, "Shoroy lebezdin l'rabanut harashit lan pik ishur l'adam lisa ishal nosefet shekein ishur zeh heino t'nai chuki l'fichok medinat Yisrael atir beligamy or polygamy." So he says that you should get a document signed by the rabbis of the Bezdin, the Dayanim of the Bezdin, so that this document will testify to the fact that he's allowed to marry a second woman. Correct? Mm-hmm. Now, in Ashkenazi circles, this document that allows him to marry, based on the Bezdin, that he's allowed to marry a second woman, is not acceptable. What do we require in Ashkenazi communities? Everybody know what we're about to learn? That's called a heter meir abonim. You never heard of it? Mm-hmm. Ah, it's a beautiful thing. Very controversial. But you can get 100 rabbis signed on a document, and based on that on those signatures, that document, he's allowed to marry another woman, and Chayv Dovei Gershon no longer applies. Mm. Okay, the last thing I want to do, and this will finish up, is the Ramah. The Ramah writes that what happens on the top of your left column, if a woman takes ill, and she's very sick, in such a way that he cannot continue being married to her. Let's say, for example, she has a psychological disorder. She's suffering from depression, lo aleinu. O mikrim no safim. There are other cases where a woman cannot possibly receive her get.
He has chayav to heal her. I mean,
correct. But let's say, the situation is such that he can.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So the Shulchan Aruch paskins in these cases that he's allowed to marry a second woman, which means that the approach or the principle of the Shulchan Aruch is that in this case chayav d'rabbeinu gershon doesn't apply. The Beis Shmuel, quoting the Bach, says, "Heter zeh doresh chatima shel mei rabbanim." Even though she's so ill, nebuch, rachmana litzlan, mentally, that she cannot receive the get, and you would think, therefore, the cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom is completely alleviated. No. You need a heter mei rabbanim. Kasher ha... What's that next word here? Ha-halich. Ha-halich means the process. Nasal yidei beitin shel gdolei ador. Now, it's not just that you and I can decide, oh, we have smicha, we're going to sign a hetamei rabbanim. The process of circulating this hetamei rabbanim, which on the first page will describe all the nisibot, you know, all the reasons for this heter, has to be begun by the bezin of musmachim. and it's got to be dayonim. Kmo chen al ha'ish lafkir et sach haktuba, and so to a man. Again, she's not capable of accepting the get, and certainly not the ksuba, the money, the 200 zuz. He's got to give that as a deposit to the bezdin. So, vahaya, if the day comes when she will be able to think clearly and lucidly, and now she could receive her ksuba, she'll be able to just walk into bezdin and receive her get and her ksuba. So again, the heter rabbanim is conditional on the fact that the Baal, before he uses the heter rabbanim, will deliver a get to the hands of Beis Din. They become like escrow, you know, in escrow. And at the same time, they would require of him that the money, the payment to the ksuba, be left in their hands.
How often are these done nowadays, heter rabbanim?
Very often. more than you would like to know. Hmm. More often than you'd believe. If I told you off the record, and I should probably shut off the recorder here, that the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, which I believe is either the first or the second largest yeshiva in the world today. Maybe it's second to the Mir, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a close call. It there's a love to see, because it depends who you count. Because what Lakewood is an unbelievable community. It's a phenomenon.
It's Mir in the States and Mir over here. There's also Lakewood here.
All right, you know what? This is
this is
a waste of time. But in any way, you should know that the Rosh Hashiva of Lakewood is married to two wives. And he's an Ashkenazi. And the get for his first wife, her name is Feinstein, is sitting in a Beis Din here in Eretz Yisrael. She can take it whenever she wants. And this happened decades ago. She never took the get because she believes that he has no right to, he had no right to divorce her and to marry another woman. So she's stubborn about that, and she never took the get. All right, so I just finish up with this last paragraph here in the name of the Achiezer. He writes, in a case of a Moredes, that's a woman who's not acting religiously, she's rebelling against the Torah, then if she refuses to accept the get, and not only that, she refuses to live with her husband in certain cases, then theoretically, he says, this Rav Chaim Oz and the Achiezer, we don't need a heter me'rabbanim. He's allowed to marry another woman without a heter. However, the minig is, under all circumstances, even when it's such a trying and difficult situation that she's not living with him and she's living with another man who's not Jewish, whatever she ran off with, nevertheless, he gets a heter me'rabbanim in all cases. And then he's on the question, which is better, if you have to violate one of the various charamim of Rabbeinu Gersha. So one is not to throw a get against her will, and the other one is not to marry a second wife. Then Rabbi Yehuda writes, we should allow him to marry a second wife rather than allow him to divorce his wife against her will. That's a more severe violation. And you remember we said before that the second charam of prohibiting him from marrying a second wife was in order to strengthen the first chayrim. Who mochiach halacha zu mitoch uvda she'isur of marrying two women, katsuv bizman, according to again the Marik, there was a time limitation. Ve'ilu ha'isur al gerishim bal korcho eno katsuv. With regard to the gerishim bal korcho, that chayrim, which was accepted, had no time limit. It's eternal. And you should know that with regard to this limitation in the case of marrying two wives, even though the Marik says that it was limited up to the year 1240, most of the communities in Israel have accepted an extension to this chayrim. Even though they could have, you know, the communities could have said, all right, technically the chayrim of Rabbeinu Gershon have expired, and that would have been okay, but most communities accepted upon themselves to extend the Cheren derogation indefinitely, even beyond the expiration date, as we say. Okay, so we just got a little bit of a taste of this halach. Yeah, what do you want to say, Aaron?
I would have thought the opposite. I would have thought it's better to let him divorce her against her will than to let him marry someone else. Because at least that one, the divorcing against her will, is actually like it's something that Gemara says is like that it's an okay thing to do. Meaning like nowhere did it say explicitly that you can marry two wives. It just like it's a thing that's done. But the Gemara says that like you could just like throw it in her chater and it's acceptable. So like I would have thought that it's better to do that one than to.
But again, keep in mind the Gemara says that ksuba was instituted. The whole institution of ksuba is drabanan because we don't want to make it easy for a man to divorce his wife.
Right, but
and now if you're saying to him, all you have to do,
but he has to pay for it in this case. It's not just a free, you know, thing that he can just.
No, but I'm just.
He still has to pay for it.
No, so, all I'm trying to say, Aaron, is the following. Let's assume people are very, you know, people are very wealthy today. You know, affluence.
For them, it's nothing.
I don't know if the ksuva at the end of the day is going to. Again, in the original takana, that was enough. But you see that the power of ksuva, where the Gemara says that a man can't live with his wife without a ksuba. That's how severe the din of ksuba is. Mm-hmm. 90% of what the Masada Kedushin is busy with when he arranges the wedding as Masada Kedushin is the ksuba. There's so much involved in the ksuba. And why? Just that a man should not exercise his legal rights to throw a get in a woman's, and just on the flick of a thing to terminate the marriage. So we really have to protect. You know, it's a funny kind of thing because on the one hand, the Torah said you're allowed to divorce your wife.
Couldn't we just like raise the amount? Couldn't, I mean, the same, like, you didn't have to like go through this whole effort.
Okay, it could be that that was the Sephardic answer to the question, but the Ashkenazic answer to the question was no such thing as a get bal koch. The fact that a man needs his wife's approval to create this get is so essential to the whole sociology of marriage. I mean, could you imagine, let's say, in the modern world, in the Western society, can you think of any culture, in the modern world, I'm not going back to the Dark Ages, I'm not talking about the deep jungles of Africa, I don't know what goes on there, but within the context of, you know, let's say from Hawaii in the West all the way to, I don't know, till countries in the East, you know, till Finland and Norway. Where is it that a man has a right to divorce his wife? With, you know, and he's the one who, he has total control over divorce. That means you're giving marriage into the hands of the husband. And although, again, at one time in Jewish history that worked, it was a modus vivendi that worked for marriage, it no longer is such. So to defend the basic, elementary rights of a woman in marriage, you have to make sure that divorce, to terminate the marriage, is mutually approved by both the husband and wife. And that, says the Nod Yehuda, is the main takana and chirim of Rabbeinu Gershon. It's much easier to be makil as far as marrying another wife, and that's why the Ashkenazim developed this het tovei rabbanan. Certain situations with the poskim say you don't even need a het tovei rabbanan. But when it comes to throwing a get into a woman's chatzar against her will, that becomes very, very simple.
Interesting.
So just to emphasize and summarize what we said for Ashkenazim, but Chaim Rabbeinu Gershon is still in force. Ashkenazim living in Eretz Yisrael have to uphold the Ashkenazi minog. And in cases where, you know, where a husband has to divorce his wife, the Beis Din here in Israel, technically, according to the law of the land, has the wherewithal to force him to use certain pressure tactics to get him to divorce his wife. However, Rav Avadia Yosef paskins for Sfardim that in principle, the psak of the Shulchan Aruch holds the last word, the final authority, and that means that the decree of Rabbeinu Gershon is no longer binding, but he adds that it's a common custom in the ksuba to include a stipulation that it's forbidden for a husband to take a second wife. This stipulation has the force of a shvuah, but it will not apply to situations in which there's a mitzvah to marry a second wife, whether it be that they had no children for 10 years or other situations that arise. And therefore, in those cases, the Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershon for Sfardim is no longer applicable. In those cases where the Sfardim allow a person to marry another wife, the Ashkenazim will get a signature document signed by 100 rabbis, that's called a Het Tovei Rabbanim, in order to allow this person to get married to a second wife. Now, we should know, and this I can't explain to you why, that in the case of a childless couple, it's not the common practice to allow a man to marry a second wife. You know, we don't apply the Cherem to Rabbeinu Gershom. I mean, the Heter Meir Rabbanu. Probably because under that situation, he's not going to deliver a get to his first wife. He's attached to his first wife. And what are you going to tell him? You're going to tell him, well, you have a Heter Meir Rabbanu to marry a second wife, but he remains married to his first wife because he's not giving her a get. He doesn't want to break up that marriage. They're still emotionally connected one to the other. And also, they're still holding out that maybe down the line they'll have children. So if you would allow him through a Heter Meir Rabbanu to marry a second wife, ultimately he's going to be married to two wives. When do we allow a Heter Meir Rabbanu? When we assume, again this is for Ashkenazim, that the marriage, he will never resume his first marriage, either because she's never, as we say, out to lunch and, you know, mentally unbalanced, or she's living, you know, she ran off living with another man, or because she refuses to let him take a job, or, you know, she's a moredes and completely undermines his ability to function as a, you know, as a religious Jew. Those are the cases in which the marriage cannot be resumed. You know, it really deserves a get, but for whatever reason, she's not willing to accept the get, or she's not capable of accepting the get, then we'll have a Heter Meir Rabbanu, and at the end of the day, he's going to be living with his second wife, not with his first wife. But to say that because the couple is childless, to allow him through a Heter Meir Rabbanu to marry a second wife, that's going to turn out to be real polygamy, where he's married to two wives. And that's not something that we're excited about. So the mitzvah is, even though, again, Sfaradim will allow it, but Ashkenazim, even with a Heter Meir Rabbanu, will shy away from this situation in which he's married to, you know, after 10 years with the first wife, he's going to marry a second woman and be married to two wives. All right, also had something prepared on the parasha, but I think we'll call it for the day.